Welcome to another week of Fox on Sports on Bedford 105.1. I'm Lauren Fox.
And I'm Andrew Hansen.
And I'm used to, I guess, in the context of things blowing out, I'm used to Jimmy Buffett. Yeah. I blew out a flip-flop, stepped on a pop-top, cut my heel, had to cruise on back home. I am not used to, I blew out my PG 2.5 and had a mild knee strain.
In the first minute of the game.
33 seconds into the game. It is the shoe blowout heard around the world, really.
Yeah, it really is.
Like, you watched the game, I'm sure.
I did.
I tuned in at like 9:25, and I'm like, all right, I'm going to be catching the end of the first half.
Yeah.
The second half, like, I'm good. And Jay Billis, the second I heard him speaking, his voice had a funereal tone. He was just done.
Yeah, it happened like, a couple times during the game.
He had been, it was like, I don't know, like you think of, and I'm not talking about my comparison of things to other disasters, but you really get the feeling that Jay Billis will put this with other major world events in his life.
That was
what it sounded like.
That was massive.
Yeah, so what we're referring to, by the way, is, in case you missed it, Duke and UNC Thursday night in an NCAA game, which, do the athletes get paid?
No.
Okay, I'm just trying to remember that.
Right.
Okay, the athletes don't get paid to play college basketball. We just need to clarify that. Tickets were going for, what, $4,000?
Yeah, minimum price was about $2,500.
Yeah, so kids, as you know, at Duke, Duke is a good school.
It is.
Yes. And these kids waited to get tickets in Krzyzewskiville. They were waiting. They were out there a month before. I don't know how you go to a school like Duke and spend that much time waiting for tickets.
Well, it's...
Mom and Dad are like, my tuition money is going to what?
Yeah, seriously. How do you keep up the class? It's the power of the internet, I guess.
Right.
Technology.
Well, I mean,
do their homework in the tents.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think there's also a rule that, like, if you have one person... I don't know what the rules are. Like, I've never been a Krzyzewskiville resident. I have been in Cameron Indoor.
Well, they've probably taken all these rules from Lawrence, Kansas. I mean, that's the original tent crew.
That, yes. However,
or at least the best.
Yeah, that is the best, and I don't think they've lost at home yet. But getting back to what happened Thursday night, Duke UNC, 33 seconds into the game, Zion Williamson does basically... I don't even know what you'd call it, a lateral move. And
it was a unique move.
Yeah, it looked like a good move, and it was too good for his shoes. He exerted so much pressure on his sneaker that the sneaker just blew out. The right side of it blew out. Have you ever done that?
No.
Okay.
But you talk about flip-flops. It actually reminds me, on the 4th of July, my flip-flops were a little bit wet, and I blew them out. In fact, I blew out two flip-flops in the same weekend.
Yeah.
And so thinking about them being wet and that sort of softening up the shoe makes you think, if something like this is going to happen, it's probably going to happen late in the game. He's tired. His shoes are wet from sweat. But it was in the first minute of the game.
I mean, you also don't know what their warm-up routine is like. He might have been a little lathered Corliss Williamson style before the game. But so Zion goes down 33 seconds into the game. That's it. Like,
doesn't come back.
And I don't want to...
Limps back to the locker room, gingerly.
Limps back to... He wasn't as gingerly as I thought he would have been. To me, it looked like, based on everything, I would have figured it was an MCL sprain or tear, and it appears to be a sprain, thankfully. Because you don't want this kid who is a freshman in college to jeopardize his future for something like this. But... The NCAA, there are a few facets to this whole thing. And this is, Sports Talk Radio is going absolutely bonkers over it. And we're going to devote probably the next 8 minutes to it, because everybody has their own slightly hot take. Hansen and I are going to cast out lukewarm takes. So my opinion on it is, and I alluded to this before somewhat snarkily, the NCAA does not pay players. The ones who are making the money out of everything are two people, well, three people, things, entities. The NCAA and its member institutions.
Check.
The television networks.
Check.
And the shoe companies.
Check.
That's it. Like, the players, and anybody can say whatever they want. The players, they get to go to school. That's awesome. Great. I agree with you wholeheartedly. But the fact that Zion Williamson is going to get basically a semester of Duke credit isn't really going to do him a whole lot. Like, it just is immaterial to him. So I get that he gets to go to school. Awesome. The gets to go to school thing works to me for lesser sports or sports that not are lesser, but sports that have less of a spotlight and less of a career potential that accompanies them. So I didn't mean to denigrate any other sports, but there are some sports that just don't have the wattage that NCAA or NBA basketball do. So Zion is not getting paid a nickel for this. He's getting room and board. He's getting to go to class, which if I were him, I mean, I barely went to class when I was in college and I was getting a degree. If I were him, I wouldn't really be going to class at all. I'd be going D equals diploma.
Right.
Like bare minimum. Like I don't, why do I need to trifle myself with this? I have the draft coming up and
I'm 20-1 basically to be the number one pick.
Right. And
like you got to bet 20 to win 21.
Right. So, I mean, I look at that and I say, well, there's that piece. He's likely to be the first pick in the first round. What is the value for him of playing out the rest of the season?
And I
make the emoji face where I have my palms to the sky and my elbows in and I just shrug my shoulders.
Well, I'm sure that's when you talk about the sports radio piece of it, that's where people are coming from, where he has a lot to lose, not a lot to gain from coming back. But without hearing any quotes from him, I think he will, because he has such a great team, a chance to win the title. If he just gets to 100% in time for March Madness, I think he'll come back and see if he can lead the team to a title.
I would agree with you. I think he will come back because these are his buddies. And these guys basically, as a cast of freshmen put together for all intents and purposes, an all-star team for the idea of going to play at Duke for 1 year and then take their talents to the league. So I think he does, and people can impart whatever of their own feelings onto him because he's a kid. He's a blank slate. And he seems like a great kid. Like you watch him in an interview, he's just magnetic. He's cool. But people can it's like a blank wall. You can show whatever up and say whatever. I think he will because he wants to. And because for him, I think he's going to look at it like this is going to be a cool resume line of I won an NCAA championship at Duke. Like that's a big thing. That's pretty cool. The question really is, should he? And you have a lot of guys who are on TV. I was watching ESPN this morning for longer than I should have. There are a lot of people on TV who will wax poetic over NCAA basketball. And this is pure basketball. And he needs to come back for the love of the game. Going back to what I was just talking about, there are three things that are making money: shoe company, schools, and TV networks. Players aren't making any money. Like, even Dick Vitale's making money out of this deal. Dick Vitale isn't broadcasting the games for free. If Dick Vitale really loved it, he'd be like us at the high school. Like,
right.
I'm doing this for free. This is the best. Dickie V's making all manner of money. So what right does he have to be like, hey, 19-year-old kid, I'm making bank doing this game. You get to do it for free.
Yeah, seriously. That's one of the good reasons why I'm not a he should guy. In general, and certainly not in this situation, he should do what he wants to do. If he wants to come back and play and risk injury, absolutely. I think it's a great decision. He'll have fun and, you know, he'll probably be fine. If he decides to shut it down, that makes total sense. I mean, you've got, you know, a knee that's, you know, we're already in late February. The tournament starts in a few weeks.
Yep.
So if it's a mild sprain and it normally takes 3 or 4 weeks to get healthy, I mean, the timetable is not ideal for him.
No.
So if he wants to say, you know what, it's just, I don't want to go back out there at 90% and, you know, risk, you know, tearing my ACL and then missing a year of NBA development, all this, and making it a lot harder for me to reach my potential as an athlete, because he has once in a generation athleticism.
Yeah.
So I wouldn't blame him at all if he decides not to come back. So I just think it's his decision. Whatever he wants to do, I'm fine with it. I would support him if I was, you know, in his inner circle.
Yeah, and there, I guess, to accompany it, if you're an NBA team, because we've had it brought up during college bowl season when guys miss a bowl game because it's a second-tier bowl and they know they're going to be a top-10 pick, and the talking heads get on TV and say, this shows that he is not committed to his team and he is not going to be a good teammate. You're out of your mind. Like, I want to watch a bowl game that has all the stars too. Like, I really want to watch that. But I have to respect the fact that, and yes, I'm also aware, I guess, ensconced in the shoe name, it's the PG 2.5, which is Paul George, who suffered a grotesque knee injury that would have been career-ending 10 years ago, and he's back playing at a super high level now. So career ending isn't what it used to be. But I look at this and I say, well, you as talking heads don't have the right to say this is it's right or wrong for this kid to do this. If this kid determines that, hey, this is the right course of action for me, for my career, not for your career, for my career, then I'm going to do it. And for if there were an NBA general manager who said, I was going to take Zion number one overall, but because he shut it down this season, I'm not going to take him. If I were the owner, I'd be like, dude, there's a line of people who are willing to take your job. Just pack up your office and go.
Exactly.
You'd be a complete goof to suggest anything like that.
Right.
So it's not the only thing really. The only thing really that's going to cost his draft stock, really, potentially, is coming back.
Exactly.
But do I think he'll come back? Yes, I will. Do I think he should? Do I selfishly want him to because I want to watch him in the NCAA tournament, even though I'm not a Duke fan? Yes.
Yes.
But
that'll make it compelling.
Would I completely understand if the guy did just shut it down? Absolutely. Like, if I use this example off air, if one of my kids said, I want to be an electrician, but I want to go to college and get a PhD and whatever beforehand, I would say, I would wag my Dikembe Mutombo finger at them, and I would say, no, go to trade school, learn how to do that, start making money. Don't walk out of there with student loans.
Yeah, the NCAA and all these entities that are involved, they should look at this as a learning opportunity to see what's at stake here if they lose a guy like Zion, and instead they should cherish his presence while he's there. And oh, by the way, the NBA just made a proposal to the NBA Players Association, the union, that, okay, we're going to eliminate the one-and-done rule, meaning we can now allow high school players to go straight to the NBA again if they want. So pretty soon, guys like this, who are the elite of the elite high school talents, freak physically, ready for the NBA at age 18, even if it only happens one guy every couple years, they're not even going to be at Duke for a year or anywhere else in Division I.
Right, and we saw what happened back in the 90s when you had some guys who had success. Kevin Garnett, Kobe Bryant, Tracy McGrady. Those were successes. Then you have Kwame Brown. The flip side of the guys who came out too early. And there's no such thing as a sure thing. And what you would really hope now is, you remember back in the 90s, these guys would declare and somebody would be like, I don't really know if he's any good or not. And they'd watch him. Kwame Brown is exhibit A. He's a freak in a combine. He can jump out of the gym. He's fast. He's athletic. He's built. There was one problem. He just wasn't a very good basketball player.
Right.
But now there is so, I can't believe I didn't mention LeBron in there. That's because he was after the 90s. There is so much film available now of these guys that it makes it way easier on people smarter than us to say, yeah, I watched the film. And I was talking to somebody about it earlier this week, the fine gradations between a great minor league player, like an A-ball player and a double A and a triple A and a major league player, the things that make somebody great are really fine. Casual fans, and I'll include myself in this as a casual fan, casual fans don't see it. People who watch hours and hours, I would lump you into this, will see those little freakish things that make somebody a Hall of Famer versus a 4-point-a-game scorer.
And it was MJ, of all people, who drafted Kwame Brown.
It's bizarre. So before we break talking about NBA and NCAA, and I'm sure we'll get back to more stuff. I just wanted to say this. Boban went 19-12 last night.
Thank you for reminding me. I saw his stats come across the ticker, and I wanted to mention it, and I forgot to write it down as a note.
Yeah.
But that's what happens when he starts. Embiid was out. Look at the numbers he puts up.
Tobias Harris scored 22, and Boban scored 19 for the Sixers.
There you go.
All right. Take a quick break. We're going to come back with one of the play-by-play voices of the Cincinnati Reds, Tommy Thrall. Back after this, Fox on Sports on Bedford 105.1. Welcome back to Fox on Sports on Bedford 105.1, and I'm Lauren Fox.
And I'm Andrew Hansen.
And we are joined by Tommy Thrall, who is a longtime friend, and I got to spend, we were roommates on the road, press box
roommates, seatmates on the bus. We probably spent way too much time together.
Oh my God, dude.
For the better part of 3 or 4 years.
Yeah, no, it was good. I enjoyed it. It was... Independent ball in the Northern League. Hanson's a Northern League alum.
Yep.
Good.
He's up there for a few weeks.
He was Sioux Falls Canary back in the day.
Oh, great. Okay. Yeah. Sioux Falls, one of the few stops I never made.
Really? Oh, that's right. Because it was gone before. Yeah, they left the Northern League at that point.
Yep. So never went there.
It was a good spot. It was fun. It was like St. Paul light. And obviously, you know how St. Paul is with all the crazy stuff they always had going on. Sioux Falls was it was owned by the same group, and it was trying to do a lot of these St. Paul things, but there's only one St. Paul. It's like, you know, you can't imitate it. You can't even compare. So
no, and markets are always different too. So it's always hard to determine how things are going to work in different markets. So
yes,
all plays in.
So, all right, speaking of different markets, you have a different market now. You were in Pensacola for how many? 7 years, is that right?
7 years. I was a beach bum over in Pensacola and loved every second of it.
Right.
And then got an opportunity to switch markets.
And so now it's Cincinnati. You are in Arizona right now, spring training for the Reds. And it's funny, I watch way too much MLB Network and way too much SportsCenter. There actually seems to be excitement around the Reds this year. They got a couple of my old Dodgers, Matt Kemp and Yasiel Puig, which means protection in the lineup for Joey Votto. What's the prevailing feeling out there in Goodyear?
Well, the exciting part is for the first time in a long time, they come in to spring actually feeling like they can be a legitimate contender. So that's part of that's really kind of the theme of spring training this year, is just knowing that they have a chance. Now, do they necessarily feel like they're going to go out and win a World Series? No, but they kind of feel like this is a year where they can turn the corner and start getting going in the right direction. It's one thing for, you know, management, upper management to say, yeah, we're committed to putting a contender on the team or a contender on the field. And then you, as a fan base, you just keep waiting and keep waiting. And not just the fans. I think that can trickle down to the players as well. Well, now they've shown that they are willing to go out and do what it takes to win at the major league level, and these moves indicate that. So because of that, not only are the fans optimistic and energized and enthusiastic, but so are the players. And that's been the greatest part of this whole thing is, you know, I've been to spring training before, but haven't spent this much time on the major league side. And that seems to be the prevailing theme is, wow, there's just a different energy in camp that they haven't had in a long time.
Well, and it would seem that way. Of course, Yasiel Puig came up to the Dodgers back in 2013 and really set the National League on fire. And obviously, it always happens. A guy comes up, is absolutely tearing the roof off, and then kind of comes back down to earth. Puig is somewhat of a polarizing figure. He really is either you love him or you hate him type guy. But he has some big-time experience in the postseason. He did really well in the World Series the last couple of years. And he's still only 28 years old. Like, he's in his prime as far as baseball players go. What do you think he brings to the table?
I think he brings that, that enthusiasm. And then obviously his bat. I mean, it's hard to argue with that. This is a contract year for him too. So he's a guy that has proven in the past that when it's time to really shine, he can. So that's going to be something that'll be worth keeping an eye on. What kind of player is he this year? I'm guessing that you're going to see his best effort day in and day out He was kind of in a platoon situation last year. He's a guy that wants to play every day. But the thing is with the Reds, is there's a bunch of outfielders here. Jesse Winker's a new guy or a young guy that came up last year. He's a guy that they want to still get daily at-bats for, but it's hard to do that when you've got a guy like Kemp and Puig. So the question is, do you move Puig over to center? Do you have Kemp play right and Winker in left? Or they've got, you know, a rookie that hasn't even made his major league debut yet, and Nick Senzel is the organization's top prospect, one of the game's top prospects. They've moved him to center field this spring to see if maybe he can be the everyday guy out there. But if that happens, well, now you've got that log jam because both Kemp and Winker really kind of need to see daily at bats. So that's what they're trying to figure out this spring and how that's all going to take shape.
So speaking about all these different players, Tommy, what's the process been like for you getting to know all these players up and down the roster as you prepare for opening day?
Fortunately for me, most of these guys are guys that came up through Pensacola. The last 7 years, the Blue Wahoos, where I worked, they were the Reds' AA affiliate. So the Reds' roster right now is made up of a lot of homegrown talent. Now, some of these new guys that they've acquired in trades, you go up and try to introduce yourself. But, you know, for season's prep, you know, you just do as much research as you can on guys. So you read everything you can get your hands on online just to kind of get to know these guys. And I think as a broadcast, and this is something I actually learned from Lauren years ago, is you want to try to bring these guys to life as people, not just baseball players. So as much information as you can dig up, you can. And then you use that. It really is talking points from there once you have a chance to sit down with a player, and maybe it's only for a few minutes around the batting cage or whatever, but use that information to kind of get to know them on a more personal level, and then that way you're able to bring them to life on the air.
I'm surprised you remember anything that I taught you. utterly shocked.
Hey, you're a big reason why I'm here, man.
Oh, dude.
There's a lot I remember, that's for sure.
No, we had a lot of fun. So with Tommy Thrall, one of the radio voices of the Cincinnati Reds, former number two guy in Kansas City with the Kansas City T-Bones, I got to bring him back down to earth. You were talking about the glut of outfielders that the Reds have. They have all these outfielders. What are they doing with a Southern California guy who's a pitcher and a hitter, and now they're throwing him in center field too? You got Michael Lorenzen in there too.
Man, he could not be more excited about this opportunity.
Can you blame him? I mean, it's like,
oh yeah,
it's what everybody, Hanson and I talk about two sport athletes all the time, and we talked about it in the context of that. The Deion Sanders 30 for 30 that just came out. Like, who wouldn't want the opportunity to, okay, yeah, we need you to pitch today, you're pitching. Okay, yeah, we need you in center field, go play center field and hit. Like, that's everybody's dream.
Yeah, it really is. And, you know, this is something that goes back to his days in the minor leagues. And like you said, there's a lot of guys talk about it and say they want to do it. He has been very adamant about it, and you know, that's a tough line to toe right there, saying, you know, I want to do this, being adamant about it without crossing over into being too much and kind of pestering everybody in the organization about it and still going about it respectfully. And he's done that, otherwise he wouldn't be getting this opportunity. Of course, the few opportunities he's had to hit in live action, he hasn't disappointed either, so that right, certainly helps the cause. But he's just he keeps himself in such good shape. I mean, You talked about his physique. If you look at this guy, I mean, I don't think there's an ounce of fat on him. He keeps himself in just tremendous shape. He's a guy that really focuses on a pretty good stretching routine, keeps himself limber, and he understands, just in the conversation I had with him, the value of being able to play the field. He goes, otherwise, your muscles aren't ready for the different – I guess really the different movements that different tasks, you know, require. So, you know, your swing may use different muscles than what it uses to pitch. Running after a fly ball and diving for a fly ball in the outfield is going to use different muscles than just throwing a baseball. You go, so the more balanced you can be with your body, the less injury prone you actually are, in his mind. And I think there's some research out there that backs that up. There's more and more research that shows kids that play multiple sports are actually less injury prone. And I think the same thing kind of ties in his opinion, with playing the field and pitching. Instead of making you more susceptible to injury, you're actually less susceptible. So he's constantly tried to train his body and keep himself in shape to where if he needed to go out and play the outfield, that would still be a possibility.
So thinking about that too, if you go out and pitch and have a good outing, and I say this as a 45-year-old dude who occasionally plays in men's leagues still, if you throw for a while, I mean, it seriously feels like somebody rear-ended you in your car. Like, I mean, everything is sore. Muscles you didn't know you had become sore. And this is for somebody who's not throwing in the high 90s. And I can only imagine the amount of strain it's going to place. Like, you really do have to be a physical specimen in order to do that. Otherwise, there's no way that you'd really be able to accomplish it. Here's a throwback for you. I mean, you think about notable guys like Greg Jacobs that have made the move from, you like that? Are you there?
Yep, I got you.
I dropped a Greg Jacobs in there for you.
Yeah, I had to pick myself up off the floor for a second, so that was...
for Hanson and the rest of the world, Greg Jacobs was a guy that we had who was like Wes Welker size, maybe like 5'7". And Jacobs was a left-handed pitcher in the Angels system, washed out, and wound up basically working his way back, getting as high as AAA as an outfielder. But you'd watch this guy in the outfield, and I still remember a play he made, and you probably remember this too. It was on a Sunday. I think we were playing against St. Paul. Somebody hit a rocket shot off the right field wall, off one of those signs. He played it off that on one hop and made a throw on the fly to second base, and it was like a comic strip. He threw the guy out by 25 feet.
I do remember that. I thought, well, where in the heck are you going with this story? There's no shot I'm going to remember a play from 20 years ago. Well, at least it feels like 20 years ago. And then you bring it up, and yeah, it comes right back to mind. I mean, this guy... It takes a special breed to be able to do that, but let alone just his arm and his ability to play the outfield. The guy could rake, too.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And looking at Lorenzen's stats, he'll be able to do the same. So, I don't know. I hope this is the beginning of a trend because it's good for the game. Go ahead.
And that's exactly what I think. You know, I remember talking to a manager years ago, and I said, What really keeps organizations from doing this? And this is, I mean, this, and when I say years ago, this is probably 6-7 years ago. And they said, well, if you take a pitcher that's athletic, you put him in the outfield and he gets hurt, you're fired. He goes, it's simple as that.
Yeah.
And so it was just, baseball was so against it because it was such a different thought. And the game, you know, is obviously so specialized and has been for so long. So I think that's where this organization, this regime kind of brings a new level of excitement because they're willing to try it. You know, David Bell is not afraid to go ahead and use Michael Lorenzen as a center fielder, and he doesn't have to be afraid because he's got the full backing of his front office, and that's a huge, huge help, and that gives you so much more confidence to experiment with stuff like this.
We are joined by Tommy Thrall, one of the radio voices of the Cincinnati Reds, in his first year with the Reds, and you and I 15 years ago were in the booth, and now you're in the major leagues, which is pretty cool. It's just awesome, dude.
It is. It's wild. Yeah.
How excited are you to be there?
I'm pumped. I mean, it is just it's funny because you had said it before we went on the air that you know you thought I would make it and there have been people that said, oh yeah, there was no doubt. It was only a matter of time. I wish I was one of those people that thought that there was no doubt because the longer you do this and the more time you spend on buses, the more time you sit there going, man, is this really what I'm supposed to be doing? And so it's so gratifying. And then it gives you an opportunity to go back and reflect on all the people that have had a big impact on your life, yourself included. I said it earlier and I meant it, that you're a big reason why I'm here. And you're one of so many people that has really helped make this, what is truly a dream, a reality. And I mean, it goes all the way back to teachers and administrators in school and high school, and I've had elementary school teachers reach out, and it's that to me is probably the most, let alone living out a dream, but all that is just really exciting just to look back at all the people that have helped make this possible, and because you have to have a tremendous support system, and there are a lot of times where self-doubt creeps in, and there's a lot of people that keep you going and keep you on this track. So it's fun for me, but it's also fun to look back and show gratitude for all the people that helped make it possible.
Well, and here's my biggest takeaway from the whole thing. Like, yeah, you say, okay, I think back to when you first came on the air with me. It was August of 2004. You randomly shot me a phone call and said, hey, can I come see you at the stadium? And we talked for a little bit, and I said, why don't you just, this is what you can do in minor league baseball. Why don't you just come tonight and you can just come and do the game with me and we can see how it goes. And, but none of that happens if you didn't pick up the phone to call to begin with. And yeah, like that to me is for any kids that are considering doing whatever, it doesn't have to be broadcasting. It doesn't have to be, you know, if you want to get a job somewhere with somebody, call up and say, hey, I'm interested in what you're doing. Can I come check it out? And most people will say, sure. Yeah, that'd be awesome. And at least then you have some kind of a foot in the door, but none of that happens if you don't call.
Right. And that's exactly what it was. And I go back and I talked to the friend that was with me the day I got your phone number at the game. I was at a T-Bones game. And, you know, because I had been interested in that, you know, when I saw that the team was coming in. I was too young because I was still in high school when the team popped up. But I said, you know, I'd love to work here. And he goes, well, why don't you find out who's in charge? And he was the one that convinced me to go up and try to figure out who made that decision. It turned out it was you. I got your phone number and gave you a call. And the funny part was, when you called back, I was at a McDonald's on my way to a Royals game. I stopped at a McDonald's, and it was loud. It was crowded, and I did not hear at all who was on the other side of the phone, and I was trying to figure it out just based on the conversation. All I made out was All-Star game, and then I realized, or All-Star break, because you were doing some yard work, and I said, this might be pretty important, so I ducked outside so I could hear
better. That's hilarious, dude.
That's how it all started.
That's funny. Maybe I knew that. I don't know. What happens if the Reds and the Royals make it to the World Series against each other? Who will you root for?
Oh, there's no question. The team that signs your paycheck. That's where your loyalties lie. I will sell out so fast and be all in on the Reds. So, you know, that would be great. I checked the schedule when I got the job, and the Reds played the Royals last year in interleague play, so it doesn't look like they'd play them again in, for a couple of years. But we've got them a couple of times in spring training. I'm actually on both of those broadcasts, and one of them I'm supposed to do right now. As of right now, I'm still scheduled to do it solo. But
I can get a plane ticket and go out there.
Come on out! It'll be like old times. So.
It's on, dude. They'll shut you down. Yeah, so, they'll shut you down.
Exactly, Marty Brenneman, who's the legendary voice up here and Hall of Fame broadcaster of the Reds. He's the one that works with the spring training schedule. We were talking about it. He goes, you better be careful where your loyalties lie in that one. I said, it's pretty easy to figure out. There's one team that signed my paycheck and gave me this opportunity. That's where my loyalties lie real quick.
Exactly. I mean, you know, and you know full well, if you're doing Royals games, you'd be sleeping in mom and dad's basement. So,
right. Yeah, exactly. Right. Yes,
so this is better. You get to have your own place.
Yeah. Yep. that's the truth. That's basically it.
It really is. That's the only difference. So yeah. For Tommy Thrall, 15 years in the minor leagues, what was the funniest thing you ever saw?
Oh, gosh. that is tough. I may have to steal one that Tucker Barnhart used on MLB Network yesterday because it was hysterical and brutal at the same time. Our air conditioner went out on the bus on the way back from Kodak, Tennessee. It was the first real hot day of the summer. It was pretty early in the season. And that, oh, by the way, is our longest trip. And we get on the bus. It's 95 degrees at least on the bus, no AC, and everybody stripped down to the bare minimum that they could have on that bus ride back. We opened up, and you know those charter buses, it's not like a school bus where all the windows open. No, you've got the vents in the ceiling that might open, and maybe the bus driver's window will slide open. So it was opened up as much as possible, and but you look back, and everybody's just basically in their underwear, and it is an unsightly experience, but hilarious all the same. And that one is up there. That's one where you kind of you sit there and the stories start flying, and all of a sudden some others come to mind. But that's one that's pretty top of mind right now that I just thought was hysterical. Not funny at the time, but you look back on it, and it's certainly one of those moments that you kind of appreciate as part of the minor league life.
It's there are many, and I'm sure that while you're enjoying the major league press box spreads, you will miss some of that stuff and all the garbage food that you got served everywhere. Runza's in Lincoln, Nebraska. I mean,
yes.
Like, you know.
Who knows how many mystery patties I've had in my life.
From, yeah, exactly.
From minor league press boxes. But hopefully they're covered in a sauce that makes them edible.
Right. Well, congratulations.
I got to tell you this one because you'll appreciate this one. Clyde backing a van through the Holiday Inn parking lot, or through the Holiday Inn in the parking lot, our bus driver.
Yep.
Was pretty good. I believe that happened outside Gary, Indiana, if I'm not mistaken.
That wasn't in Gary. I believe that was in Schaumburg.
And might have been Schaumburg.
I don't think his name was Clyde. What was his name?
I don't remember, but he was
like
had the bus driver that hit just about everything.
Oh yeah,
year.
Dude. Well, he went to back this. We were in Schaumburg and we were going to leave, and he basically took out a section of the hotel with the bus. We had it happen. Yeah. When I was working in Hagerstown, I think we went to the gym in Lexington, and the bus driver basically sideswiped somebody's car. The 14-hour trips from Kansas City to Winnipeg, where, you know, you weren't on this trip. Joe Goodman, one of our relief pitchers, literally spent 14 hours singing the one line from a Toby Keith song. I ain't as good as I once was, but I'm as good once as I ever was. He sang it for 14 hours.
I mean, that's just the best way to pass the time as far as I can tell.
It's just,
especially if you're sitting next to him.
It's just astonishing. I don't remember how to play Pluck anymore, but you know, the amount of time that I spent playing stupid card games. Yeah, it's it will be an entirely different journey for you. Well, I'm glad that that you got there. I'm proud of you, and look forward to catching up during the season too.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate it, and thanks for everything. It's been a fun journey, and it all started back in Kansas City.
Yep.
When we shared a booth.
Oh my God, dude.
And good memories there too. No doubt about that.
By the way, and the first thing I did when I saw that you got the job was to see if there was an interleague game against the Red Sox. There is not.
There is next year. I think we'll go to Boston. So.
Oh, it's on. All right, good.
Look forward to it, man.
All right, thanks, man. Take care. Enjoy the day.
Thank you.
Bye.
Will do. Bye-bye.
That was Tommy Thrall, the radio voice, or one of the radio voices of the Cincinnati Reds. And we'll take a quick break. Come right back with Louis Watson from the Bedford High Wrestling Program. You are listening to Fox on Sports on Bedford 105.1. Welcome back to Fox on Sports on Bedford 105.1. Lauren Fox.
And Andrew Hansen.
And we are joined by one of the Bedford High wrestling coaches, Louis Watson, who I think from talking to you before the season, Louis, it really seemed like you were kind of breathing a little bit of life back into that wrestling program.
I was trying to.
It's good to see the enthusiasm for you. Okay, so nobody ever just stumbles on wrestling. What's your background? And, you know, what's your wrestling resume? What years you graduate and what weights did you wrestle at?
So my wrestling background, I did stumble upon it when I was in fifth grade. I'm actually from New Hampshire when I was young, but I moved away in fourth grade and didn't know anything about wrestling when I lived here in New Hampshire and ended up in Anchorage, Alaska, playing baseball with a buddy who was, I don't know, 30 pounds lighter than me. And we'd roll around as, you know, young guys do. And he'd always throw me a beat. And so I finally asked him, how'd you get so good at this stuff? And he said, I wrestle. And so his dad was the coach and he invited me out to the youth wrestling program. And I started wrestling in fifth grade. I was probably, 90 pounds back then. And so I wrestled all the way up until I actually moved back to New Hampshire junior year of high school, ended up going to Trinity, who didn't have wrestling. So then I did off-season stuff, and then after high school, I went into the Marine Corps and did some club sports, wrestling. My weight classes throughout my career were 90 pounds to 160 was my last weight class. Well, I take that back. I wrestled in some opens when I was 200 pounds, but as far as team sports, I was about 90 to 160 pounds.
It's funny because I will step on the scale now, and I stepped on the scale this morning, and I was 191, which I could still tell you what the weight classes were when I wrestled in high school, you know, 98, 105, 112, 119, whatever. I was 119 or 126 when I wrestled, depending on the year, the matchup, whatever. And I remember thinking, like, the 191-pound guys were big. And now I'm like, I step on the scale, I'm like, well, I would have to cut to make weight at 191.
Well, it's scary. I graduated from Marine Corps boot camp at 180 pounds, and I'm currently 230. So it's and that's after the season. I've lost 12 pounds this wrestling season. So I definitely feel your pain.
Yeah, it's just a bizarre thing to look at and go, you know, I wouldn't want to have to. Well, that was back in the day, back in the early 90s. I mean, because we're relatively close in age. If it was apparent that you weren't going to make weight, and I still remember this, I was supposed to be a 119 the next day. I got on the scale. I was 125. Coach looks at me and goes, well, basically, you don't want to miss weight. And I walked around wearing a sweatshirt, sweating, spitting, running around a heated wrestling room, trying to drop weight, got down to 119, and then, and that was like 2 hours before the meet, ate everything in sight, and then got absolutely destroyed.
And absolutely, yeah.
And there's a reason why you guys don't do it like that anymore, obviously.
Yeah, I mean, my freshman year, I remember I walked around at about 131 pounds and 132, and I wrestled 119. So every week was a grind that made the season very long. So when I actually coached at Memorial High School for about 6 years, and the head coach, Ryan Sheeting, was one of my wrestlers. And even back then, and that was in the early 2000s, my philosophy on weight cutting and weight loss were drastically different than when I wrestled, just due to the fact that I wanted it to be fun. The sport's fun. It's a tough sport. Even if you're not cutting weight, it's a rugged, tough sport. So why make it harder by including cutting weight, you know? So.
Right. And, well, of course, now that's something that you can't do. It's largely been legislated out of the sport. So it is much healthier for the kids that are wrestling now than it was back
absolutely.
Then.
So we don't even promote. I mean, we don't even promote weight cutting to the extent that we're allowed to. I mean, I would say 90% of the kids on the team this year wrestled what we would consider up. You know, our 152 pounder weighs 145. You know, in the old days that would have been a 38 pounder or possibly even a 26 pounder. You know, so most of the kids on the team are having fun and they're wrestling up.
We're joined by Louis Watson, one of the coaches of the Bedford High School wrestling team. And Louis, we're joining you late in the game here in terms of this season. We understand that the Meet of Champions is tomorrow. Where are we as far as the season goes for the Bedford team?
Well, we're winding down. We do have two individuals, Jack Carosi at 138 pounds and Will Theodore at 145. They both placed at D1s, and they will be coming back tomorrow. They're going to have to, you know, obviously to place in any state. You're going to have a couple tough matches to get into the placing rounds, but both of them are expected to place tomorrow. I think anything less than placing would be everyone would be a little disappointed. But, you know, we have a really young team. We got seven freshmen that came in, all of them tough, all of them with the right attitude. We're very happy with the season. We got four dual wins, a couple of them against tough teams that pounded us during tournaments. But when we went out and saw them, in a duel, we actually beat them. So, and we were forfeiting about five weight classes this year, which didn't help, you know, in a duel situation.
Right. That's always a tough setup too. And I don't think people realize that if you're going head to head and each time I don't know how the point system works back in the day, it was 6 points for a forfeit. That's really tough to overcome when you're in a dual meet against somebody.
Yeah, giving up 30 points, and you're right, Lauren, it is 6 points per. Essentially, you get the same points as a pin forfeit. So, your spot in the other team 30 points before you even start wrestling. So that's always tough.
So when we spoke before the season, it looked like recruitment and retention would be a challenge. But some of the results, and you spoke about a couple of the kids that are still continuing on in the postseason tournaments, things look good outside of the two that you just spoke about. What are some of the highlights this year?
Well, I think really one of the a huge highlight is Danny Benny. He's a freshman. He's wrestling 113. You think that's a small weight class, but you know, any weight class as a freshman when you're coming in and you're going against juniors and seniors with far more experience, their muscle, they've developed more. And he's placed in, I believe, two tournaments this year. I know he placed in the Chelmsford tournament, which anytime you step across the border into Massachusetts, wrestling takes on a whole different meaning. It's just a tougher state for wrestling. And Danny went down and he placed fifth at Chelmsford. So that was a huge accomplishment for a freshman. And then we Finn O'Neill, I spoke about him earlier. He's wrestling at 152, which, I mean, like you said, when you were in high school, you know, those weight classes are usually upperclassmen. Once you get up to 52, 60, the 70s, 80s, and Finn's done a really good job. He's probably going to finish around 500. He bumped up because Will Theodore's at 45, and he's a senior and won the wrestle off, and that's the cool thing about wrestling. So Finn wanted a starting spot, so he bumped up to 152, and he's taken some lumps, but he's a tough kid.
It is not an easy sport, and anybody that hasn't participated in it or hasn't watched it, it's grueling. You look at it and you say, hey, how hard can it be to get out there on the mat for 6 minutes? It takes you being really in tip-top shape, and a lot of that really has to do with the coaching and conditioning that that the team goes through.
Yeah, absolutely. One funny story, and I'll give him a little plug here, is Alex Pantalokas, or they call him Pants at Bedford High. You know, really good inside linebacker on the football team. He's senior. He decides to come out for the wrestling team. You know, for a kid that has nothing to prove, they just came off a state championship. He didn't need to come out and put himself through that his senior year, and he did. And he was our 220-pounder. And, you know, I think right after the football season, first day of practice, he was hugging the barrel, vomiting. And he said, man, I've never been through anything like this. And we all laughed. It was a pretty funny little, couple minutes there.
I remember those days well of sitting there and thinking, like, really realistically, how hard can this be? I just finished baseball season. This is off season wrestling. This is going to be easy. And then the next thing you know, you're hugging the barrel or you're outside just finding a bush.
Yeah. Yeah. No. And Alex is funny. So Pants, you know, one of his things, he's getting ready to go, graduate from high school. And he said, hey, I'd like to lose some weight. And I think he's down 20 pounds, not because of cutting weight, just pure exercise and getting in better cardiovascular shape, which was great.
Yeah, I will say this with complete confidence. I've run marathons, half marathons, and have been in good shape. I've never been in better shape than when I was wrestling in high school. It is the level of conditioning is absolutely insane. So for you, Louis Watson, and the Bedford High Wrestling Program, what's the future look like?
Well, the middle school program is doing a great job in MPOW. So Lurgio has a program, and then MPOW here in Manchester, the Manchester Police Athletic League, which is free, and they run all off season as well. But I think we have 13 to 14 freshmen coming in next year. So we're losing three. We're going to gain about 13. We're hoping to be up around 30 wrestlers in the room. Really the future is we need that football player. We need those tough kids that are that 170 and above. We changed the singlet to two-piece, although I'm a fan of the singlet, the old-fashioned singlet. You have to change and you have to adapt with the times. And we hear a lot of kids not wanting to wear the uniform. So we're still going to have the singlets, but we also give the kids an option. They're all going to get a two-piece, which is just a compression shirt and essentially like MMA fighting shorts. So we're hoping some of those big, strong kids in the weight room that we see decide to come out, Great thing about wrestling, as you know, there's a spot for any shape, size, athletic ability. I've seen kids that aren't awesome athletes come out and win state championships. So it's a cool sport, and the future is getting some of those big, strong kids out for the team and keeping them, right? I think there's a couple kids that decided to do some other things this winter. And so we lost a couple upperclassmen that would have been great leaders on the team and would have definitely filled the void that we had. So going forward, Coach and I and Coach P and Coach Ryan, we're flexible. You can't be hard on the kids like in the old days. I mean, they have so many options now between skiing and other sports and just going home and playing video games that if you're not flexible, if you're not having fun, kids decide to do other stuff. So, I think the message that the coaches want to get out there is like, come on out, have some fun. You've done it before. Wrestling is a family. It's different than other sports. We become very close. And so we just want to have some fun, build up the program, have another successful Bedford team like the town likes to have, right?
And it sounds like you're on the right track. I know basically it seems like numbers have or will doubled from a couple years ago to now, and really it's the continuity and the passion that you guys bring to it that will continue to get kids out. Well, we appreciate the sacrifice that you make for these guys, and best of luck. Are there any ways that they can do anything in the off season? Do you guys have any programs or camps or anything like that that you recommend?
Yeah, I mean, Smitty's Barn down in Danville, I believe, down by Plastow. They go year round. Off season's obviously popular there. MPAL right here in our backyard. Officially we can't have off season programs, which is fine. We want the kids to off season to lift. We changed the practice this year. That's another thing we did. We changed the practice to later in the day because we wanted football players to still be able to go lift with the team after school. We were lifting Tuesdays and Thursdays. The football team lifts Monday, Wednesdays, and Fridays. So we want the kids getting strong. We want them getting bigger, stronger, and just more aggressive. But, yeah, definitely MPAL. There's some summer tournaments kicking around. I think Coach Ryan's actually going to go and compete down south with a couple of the kids, and he'll compete himself. He's still a young guy. So just stay in shape, lift, and stay in touch, and that's it.
Awesome. Well, we appreciate the time. Get back to work, and we'll look forward to talking to you soon.
Awesome, guys. Thank you.
Cool.
Take care, Louis.
All right.
That was Louis Watson of the Bedford High Wrestling Program, and I think I hung up on him before he was finished talking, but that was not intentional. I think he was just saying goodbye to us. But the amount of commitment that's required of those kids wrestling and of the coaches, too. I mean, it's some sports you look at and you go, all right, baseball, you're on a field in the sun. Like, there's an intrinsic reward of being out there. Wrestling, you're in a windowless room.
Yeah. I mean, it sounds like you have to make a real commitment, and it's no wonder that everybody becomes more of a family in that atmosphere with that intense physical commitment you have to make.
Yeah, it really is. So congratulations to Louie and the team for all the work that they've put in. You and I have spent a lot of time at the basketball court in the last few weeks with the boys and girls basketball team. We got to do that girls game against Portsmouth. And as it turns out, did you hear about the boys game?
Yeah, big heist. It was like the All-Star game with all that scoring.
92-83, the final. Double overtime loss. Justin O'Neill with 33 points in that loss. And it's funny, we were talking to Corey about on the show last week about the fact that it was an hour getting out there and how you're a little bit blown out by the time you get out of the car. And he's like, yeah, an hour. Some of these hockey teams are commuting 3-4 hours for a game. Well, the boys went out there after that strenuous, arduous one-hour commute and took the sixth-ranked team in the state to double OT.
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't 14 hours Kansas City to Winnipeg.
No, but it was certainly notable.
Oh, and, no, that's a terrific performance. Portsmouth has a very good record this year. And to go on the road and get that to double overtime, that's a strong performance. Too bad they couldn't pull it out.
And then you and I are doing the boys' game tonight. Who do they have tonight?
Winnicunnett.
Oh, that's right. It is Winnicunnett tonight. So
this is Friday.
Yeah,
so
tonight
if you're listening
is Friday.
On Saturday,
you're listening Saturday.
Hopefully you were at the game or you watched the game or you listened to the game.
Or you might have done all three. That would be weird. But we'll do the boys' game tonight. The girls close their season tonight, obviously, against Winnicunnett at Winnicunnett. They picked up a win in the game that we did last week against Portsmouth. Well played game. Really, and I'm sure you're going to talk about it, evenly distributed scoring. And we're seeing some names in the scoring column popping up that are really showing themselves to be scoring threats.
Yeah, four players with at least 8 points. Amanda Jonas had 8, Allie Morgan 9, Lizzie Stevenson 11, and Isabella King 12. Yep. And then Kendi only had 4, but she was in foul trouble, so she didn't get her normal allotment of minutes. But to have that balanced scoring across the board is really tough to defend.
It has been tough to defend, and speaking of tough defense, Kendi is the one that comes to mind there. If you're Bedford, you really can't afford to have her in foul trouble. And that's, you hate to ever say, as one player goes, the team goes, but her abilities on defense to pick up basically anybody the opposing team throws at them, she does a very good job. You get her and Jonas down low, and opposing teams have a real hard time scoring points in the paint, forcing their game outside, and we've seen it so far this year. teams basically throughout the state are having a hard time scoring from outside. The long distance shots are close to non-existent. They'll get their buckets down in the paint, but if you have Kendi and Amanda down there on the down there in the paint, it really makes a big difference for Bedford on defense.
Yeah, and then Catherine Pennick coming off the bench helps as well. But as a team, one of the things I noticed was the great help side defense from Bedford.
Yep.
And that's where you can really make it difficult on the opposition, because if they either go for the lob pass, which we saw a couple times, or if they happen to get past one of the defenders, when you're there to help, you know, it really frustrates the opposition, let alone prevents them from scoring on that possession. And I thought Bedford showed that as a team.
So, yeah, they have looked good on D, and I really think, too, as things kind of round into form for playoff season, it seems like they are rounding nicely into shape. The boys, I don't know if they're going to make the playoffs. It would appear to be unlikely. They've lost their last nine, but hopefully they can get back in the win column tonight and close things out in the regular season. Hockey picked up a 4-0 win over Hanover, usually a traditionally tough team, Hanover. So the Bulldogs back in the win column, and the girls ended their season. They will not make the playoffs, but in year two for the program, they picked up 4 wins. The second to last game, they won 10-1.
That's excellent.
So a good closing for the Bedford hockey program.
Trending in the right direction.
Trending in the right direction, and the boys will head on to the playoffs, where really seemingly anything can happen. We've seen them look spectacular, and we've seen them kind of scuffle a little bit, but you have a real strong feeling that Coach Marty Myers has been there before. He knows the drill in the playoffs, and if the players just follow his lead, this is a team that could win a state championship. So only time will tell. PGA Tour, shorts. What?
Practice rounds, pro-am rounds.
Not a game. Okay.
But practice, you can see the players in a whole different way. And the ESPN story showed Phil Mickelson in a way that I've never seen him before.
With shorts on.
He actually looks like quite an athlete. Guy has calves like you might think Zion Williamson has.
It's surprising to me. My favorite Phil Mickelson thing is the fact that the only thing he does left-handed is golf.
Right.
Because he watched his dad as a kid and picked up the mirror image. Like, that's just cool. Like, it's just that to me is the most, like, father-son sports thing of all time is that, yeah, you never followed the fact that you were swinging with the opposite hand. You just picked up that this is how it's done.
Exactly.
Because this is how I watch it.
Right.
But it's... Yeah, it will be interesting to see that. I'm glad that they have the ability to, because why shouldn't they be comfortable like the rest of us?
Yeah.
We get to golf in shorts.
Right.
Well, you do. I don't really golf anymore.
Yeah, just not in tournaments yet.
No. you got a few years. You got 10 years to the senior tour.
Yeah, right.
You're good. And then the NBA All-Star Weekend.
We got to do a recap of the shootout, the scoring fest.
Oh, my God.
Team Hanson.
There's no defense played. Did you do the math?
I did.
Thank God somebody did.
Team Hanson put up 190.
Oh, so you won.
Team Fox struggled to the finish line with only 152.
Wow, that's just brutal.
Yeah.
So, okay, Giannis was high point. He had 38.
He was really on track to win the MVP until the team coughed up the lead to Team LeBron.
Yeah, I really thought that we were going to see more out of Dirk and more out of D. Wade.
Well, what else could you ask for out of Dirk? He was one of the highlights, those 3 three-pointers off the bench. What a magical moment, and probably exactly what Adam Silver and the rest of the folks at the NBA offices were looking for, where you highlight a guy's career and you reward him with another All-Star appearance, and he has those memorable moments, and he's able to take that away, and you know, the rest of the players are able to enjoy it with him, which they did.
It's also made me happy to see D. Wade going on his farewell tour and everybody trading jerseys with him. Like, there are some guys, and Dirk is one, and D. Wade's another. Those two have just been class acts the entire way through their careers, and it's good to see them both sort of going out in style and being recognized. And D. Wade has always been the Robin to LeBron's Batman, largely.
And we got to see one more alley-oop off the glass from D. Wade to LeBron.
That sort of stuff, that's fun, because it makes you remember that as much as you want to paint these guys, and we talked about it last week to a degree, as much as you want to paint these guys in a light of they're multi-million dollar athletes. They're also guys who like hanging out with their buddies.
Right.
So,
right.
So all right. Thank you to our guests today, Tommy Thrall of the Cincinnati Reds, Louis Watson of the Bedford Iowa Wrestling Program. Thank you to my co-host, Andrew Hansen, as well as the staff here at Bedford 105.1, Harry Kozlowski, Colleen Richardson, and Bill Jennings for all that they do. And thank you to you for tuning in to Fox on Sports. This has been another great sports week, and we're not doing a show next week. It's school vacation week. We'll take a break. Harry will probably put a best of show out there, and we will catch you the week after that. In the meantime, enjoy the week. We will catch you next time. You've been listening to Fox on Sports on Bedford 105.1.